Hello, everybody. I'm Amy Solomon, and I'm the co-PI on this study that we call an exploratory study, it truly was, of juvenile orders of protection as a remedy for teen dating violence. Is everybody aware of what an order of protection is? Okay. So I don't have to go into defining any of that. Let me just, okay. Go back there for a minute. No relationships to disclose. I want to frame this presentation a little bit by an article that just recently came out also from Texas in the Dallas Morning News. And the thing that struck me about this article written by a woman named Myra Madden, who was a staff writer writing about the increasing prevalence of teen dating violence in Dallas, was that she hit on four really important points that actually came out of our study of protective orders in New York, and it just made me feel like so much of this is both intuitive but not out there. And so basically what she talked about, one was that about a young woman who was 16, Myra, who escaped to a shelter after her boyfriend attacked her and left her upper body filled with purple bruises. What was interesting to me here is Myra's quote, which is, "He pushed me to the ground. I fell on my belly and my face." Myra was pregnant, by the way. "And that's when I was certain that I had nobody." One of the things that really jumped out of our study, and I'll tell you all about how we designed it in a minute, but just to keep this in mind, was the extreme isolation, the having nobody. That's part of both the experience of the violence itself, as well as the experience of actually trying to move forward to figure out ways to protect yourself and be safe, including going after an order of petitioning an order of protection. So Myra was 16 and pregnant. I mentioned that. She was the youngest person in North Texas to take refuge in a domestic violence shelter that year. So that's another important point that we also found in New York, that the domestic violence shelter programs are generally available to adults and not young women. They either don't know, are fearful of actually using them, there's no outreach. This was an astounding piece of information in some ways to us in New York City, where we thought we would have more supports in place for young victims. Not the case. Texas is among a growing number of states allowing minors to seek protective orders without their parents' involvement. So we're getting more and more states. At this point, I think we're up to 20 or maybe even 21 states where young people are allowed to actually seek an order of protection on their own without parental involvement. The point of this and the reason this has been put in place is a belief that young people are not going to share the situation of being in an abusive relationship with their parents, that this will facilitate their going out and actually getting some help and orders of protection. What we found is that while that may be the case, there's nothing in place in New York anyway that acknowledges any difference between young women, and in our study it was women, young women, 18 years or younger, from adult women going after an order of protection. So that while they're allowed to move forward with this at this point, there is no facilitation or supports to do that in any consistent statewide way. Okay, and then in Texas, over this 1 year period, 18 teens only filed for a protective order in Dallas County, which had a population of 2.45 million. That is tiny. The way these laws are structured has a lot to do with that. In Texas, both the petitioner, that's what we traditionally consider the victim or survivor, the petitioner is a juvenile, but also the respondent, the alleged abuser, has to be a juvenile. What we found in New York, and we'll talk about this in a minute, is that most of the perpetrators were adults. of situations where the girls actually were juveniles and went after protective orders. So this state in Texas captures a tiny piece of those relationships. Okay, so let me just move on to tell you a little bit more background for this study. And this was also quoted in this Dallas Morning News article. Approximately one in three teenagers, 7 million youth nationwide, will experience dating abuse during their teenage years. So this is a big problem. The countermeasures are really in their infancy, and countermeasures mean the kind of prevention that we could be talking about here, as well as actually court-based countermeasures, in this case, orders of protection. At least 19 states, it's now up to 20, have expanded civil orders of protection. However, research is really in its infancy on this question. Our study in New York State was the first comprehensive study looking at what does this all look like? Who's asking for orders? What do the perpetrators look like? What kind of abuse is involved? How does the court respond? What do kids think about using this? What do kids who have actually used it find as barriers to using it or facilitators? So we sort of went through a very descriptive exploratory study. No comparable research, by the way, on juvenile orders as we have on adult protective orders. So very new area. You should all start working in this area because I think there's a lot of potential help out there, but it's not framed at this point in a way that's really responsive to what young people need. Okay, so in New York State, where our study was conducted, in 2008, the protective order law was amended to allow juveniles to seek in family court, this is not a criminal proceeding, in family court, an order of protection for intimate abuse. In the past, if you had a child in common with the alleged perpetrator, you could move forward on your own. But if not, just for a intimate dating relationship, you could not get a protective order on your own. Your parents would have to file that for you. So the change in New York and a lot of states is to allow kids to actually go and petition in the family court itself. There's no requirement in New York that parents are involved in any way or informed in any way. And unlike Texas, in New York, there's no cap on the age of the perpetrator. So what we were able to find out, because of the way this law is structured, is kind of what that age range really looks like in terms of at least those people who filed. The study team is Advocates for Human Potential, where I work. That's a Massachusetts-based firm. We partnered with Cornell University's Bronfenbrenner Center. They are presenting on that portion. Their portion of the study was a general focus groups with youth across New York State who were potentially at risk in terms of their age, but had not necessarily used orders of protection. What Andy Klein and myself, what we did was the quantitative piece of the study and the qualitative piece of speaking with girls themselves who've actually initiated or completed an order of protection, going for an order of protection. Then these other agencies in New York State were the data sources for our study. The aims were to conduct the first statewide study of juvenile orders of protection for dating violence, including providing descriptions of orders of protection use among teens, including who's securing them, against whom, for what, to determine the court's response, what does the court do about it, what kind of stipulations do the judges put on this, to determine the rates of order violations, other re-abuse and associated characteristics of re-abuse, who's more likely of these perpetrators to re-abuse, and explore teen perspectives on using orders of protection. Our methods were really integrative multi-methods. We tried to basically keep informing ourselves using the qualitative piece and the quantitative piece. The quantitative piece included multiple data sets, and they're on your, I'm sure you can get this here, and I'm going to just run through this. Qualitative piece of focus groups, I've mentioned that already. These are the offices that were responsible for and responsible for gathering and also working with us on the data. There are automated files of every order of protection petition filed in New York State. So we were able to get total numbers of petitions and descriptions of who the petitioner was, who the respondent was, and all of that through the New York State Office of the Court Administrator. The Division of Criminal Justice Services also has criminal history files, so we were able to look at criminal histories of the perpetrators. Domestic incidents reports or police files, so we were able to see more about what happened after the fact. In total, we had 1,200 teen petitioners across New York State, 18 years or younger. Slightly more respondents just because some petitioners had two respondents. This is the slide that describes a little bit more about what Cornell did. 122 individuals involved in 12 focus groups. These were basically youth serving agencies served as the identifiers for young people who were part of these focus groups. And this was just very general information to try to get a better sense about whether young people had any idea this was available and kind of what their gut instinct was about whether, in fact, they would ever use such a thing, why they would, why they wouldn't. So you should go to this session. It's tomorrow at 10:30. Cornell is doing part of their session is going to be on this part of the study, so I'm not going to talk to you about it at the moment. The qualitative data for the women who, young women who had actually used orders of protection was the hardest part of this study, as most of you, if you're researchers, would guess. With a very small number of kids, only 255 orders in New York City over the study period, we found ourselves virtually, it was like looking for a needle in a haystack to try to identify young women, and for a variety of reasons, we had a huge problem. We partnered with Day One, which is the only legal services program in New York City. We were only doing this part of the study in New York City because we thought we'd be able to find these women. They represent teens seeking orders of protection. They did outreach to over 90 organizations and schools that they work with, and we still had huge problems finding young women who actually had used the orders of protection. So we found ultimately only 13, but what they told us was so rich that we just wanted to include it, and it was really, really fascinating stuff. So I'm just going to try to run through really quickly what our major findings were on this study. Number one, only a tiny fraction of potential teen dating violence victims used orders of protection during the study period. We found really limited awareness of orders of protection in the general teen population. Did I just move forward? Yeah. What was very interesting about the Cornell work was the kids that they had focus groups with were particularly confused about the very things that were supposed to make these orders of protection more accessible to teens. So they were completely convinced that you had to tell your parents and that your parents had to come along, and you had to have the police involved. Both of those things were not the case. It's family court. The police are not, you don't need to have the police involved, and you don't need your parents. So there was sort of uniform confusion about how you'd get this, all of that. Youth reported substantial barriers to the use of orders of protection. Most of the barriers centered on beliefs and fears. They were kind of internal barriers about really worry that it's only a piece of paper, it's not going to really help me, that your friends will consider you in a different way, they think you're a snitch, that it's going to be too hard, it's too big a deal, I wouldn't be able to deal with this myself. And what we found were that those internal barriers were way more significant in a lot of ways for kids than the systematic barrier, the system barriers. The OP users themselves really stressed the difficulty in letting go of this relationship, very similar to what you would imagine with adults. And this was something that a lot of our advisory committee members were surprised about. They were very attached. This was a major relationship in a lot of situations. It was the only loving relationship they felt they'd ever had with a man. There was no father in their household. These were girls who really did not want to let go, and it was very hard to do that without anybody helping you. Almost all the petitioners were female and younger than their dating partners. Most abuse alleged by petitioners involved harassment and assaults. So this was, in general, in New York State, they broadly defined harassment and it includes things like stalking, cyber-stalking, and some physical assault. So, you know, this was not minor pinching each other sort of type of relationship violence. Some of the respondents actually resembled sexual predators. It was a small amount, but they were old enough, and they had been charged with criminal sexual acts in the past, and that had not been dealt with in the courts. Repeated and sometimes escalating violence drove teens' decision to move forward with orders of protection. They got to a point, there was sort of a tipping point, where they just knew that they couldn't go on, and it was, in some cases, really serious. Gangs attacking them, girl gangs attacking them on the part of the boy if they were to move forward, various things that were as well as the perpetrator. OP users described a justice system in transition with no systematic approach to working with teen victims. There was uneven knowledge, even on the part of the police and judges, about the availability of OPs. They got all sorts of crazy information, particularly from police. There was limited understanding, often belittling of the experience and impact of victimization. Long waits in court interfered with school, with ongoing responsibilities, which included work for a number of these young women, and contributed to feeling overwhelmed. And this part was, for me, I work a lot in the trauma area, this fear, especially when the abuser was in the courtroom, tended to compromise girls' understanding of what was really going on in court. And there were multiple triggers for trauma. They were basically dissociating, and it was a very scary situation to be there. A little more than a quarter of the respondents re-abused their petitioners through 2012. And then the characteristics associated with re-abuse were gender, significantly more likely that if your abuser was a male, that there'd be re-abuse. If your abuser was more than a year older than you, that there'd be re-abuse. Petitioners with children in common were more likely to be re-abused, and respondents with prior criminal histories were significantly more likely to re-abuse. So our conclusions, despite the limited use of OPs, are potentially important tools in deterring re-abuse and satisfying victims. And when we had our focus groups and asked them, was it worth it, they basically said yes. We don't necessarily feel any safer, but we feel better about ourselves, and somebody listened to us, and we protected ourselves, similar to what you hear in adult research. Given the lack of police involvement, however, alternative adult networks were just not in place yet. So kids really had to do this on their own or with a parent who'd experienced abuse. That was fairly common. Their mom helped them. Okay. Domestic violence and youth services really have to increase their outreach to young survivors. Pre and post court support is needed. Courts should examine whether current procedures provide meaningful access to young survivors. The young survivors don't feel they do. The court needs to start thinking about that more. An increased training for police and court personnel on teen dating violence, including the impact of trauma on young survivors, is key and really important. Our final report, by the way, is on National Institute of Justice is our funder on their website. But if you'd like a copy or want to ask us anything, I know I galloped through this. That's my email. Andy Klein is the PI. That's his email. We're happy to talk with anybody, send you the final report. Way more information in that. And thank you for your patience. I don't know what happened there, but...